everyone. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Rachel, and I wanted to start today with a story. Back in the summer, I interviewed a restaurant owner and chef named Aaron Miller, who runs a small restaurant called Urban Hearth, a few blocks from my house in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And before interviewing her, I had never visited the restaurant, but I was looking for people to talk to about their experience managing food businesses during the pandemic. And Urban Hearth sounded like it was doing some creative things to keep its doors open. Aaron and I had a great conversation, which made its way into an article for Strong Towns, and I'll share that link in the notes. Anyway, since that interview, I've gotten takeout from Aaron's restaurant dozens of times, ate there a few times in the summer when they had outdoor seating, and Urban Hearth has basically become the go-to place anytime my husband and I want a delicious and somewhat indulgent meal at the end of a long week. I don't think I would have even noticed the restaurant, let alone become such a dedicated patron, if I hadn't talked to Aaron and heard her story. I found myself rooting for Urban Hearth during this whole pandemic and watching with really impressed by how they're figuring out ways to creatively stay in business. I say that all to preface the guest that we have today. Jacob Titus is a photographer, filmmaker, designer, and creator living in South Bend, Indiana. In this conversation, we talk about the publication that he started, West SB, and how he uses photography and writing to tell the stories of his city, its people, its places. We talk about what happens when you open your eyes to the stories around you. We talk about how art can help people see things differently and even build stronger towns. We talk about the revelations that take place when we look closely at the history of our cities. And yes, we talk a little bit about Mayor Pete Buttigieg, too. So with that, here's my conversation with Jacob Titus. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. Today's guest is Jacob Titus, creative director and founder of West SB, based in the town of South Bend, Indiana. Jacob, welcome to this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Can you start out by telling us a little about yourself and your community?
Yeah, so I'm a resident of South Bend, Indiana, and I operate a small design studio here. And like you said, I publish a blog about South Bend called West SB, which I'm guessing that's the avenue that connected the two of us. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been reading your site as a team at Strong Towns for a bit. And I think other folks on the team have probably been reading even longer than me. So yes, we're fans of your work.
Awesome. Love to hear that. So I would guess that a lot of your listeners are at least casually acquainted with South Bend over the last year since Mayor Pete ran for president and was, I guess, surprisingly successful with that. But historically, South Bend is known for creating products that were used kind of around the world. That would include Studebaker, Oliver Chilled Plow, AM General, and Bendix. Because of that, we kind of fit pretty neatly into this Rust Belt category of cities that grew a lot with industrialization and declined a lot with deindustrialization and lost a lot of people. We published this article series over this last year called More People, where another resident of South Bend, Joe Molnar, talked a lot about this population decline and kind of tracing that and how did that actually happen. And found that this is kind of the story of a lot of cities. And these are the cities that we typically would think of and call Rust Belt cities. And so South Bend fits into that category for anybody who's kind of familiar with a similar.
Yeah, I will definitely link to that More People series. It's super powerful work. Did you grow up in South Bend, and what led you to the work that you're doing now?
So I was born in Akron, Ohio, and moved to South Bend when I was 8. My parents came here to run a small summer camp on the west side of town. It's a little west of the airport for anybody who's familiar with South Bend. And I was here then until college. I went to IU Bloomington for 4 years and then came back to South Bend kind of unwillingly. My entire intention was never to come back to South Bend. And it's at least my experience that that is kind of the norm, that none of us in high school, when we talked about our future, none of us included South Bend in any of those conversations. It wasn't a city that anybody kind of imagined a future for themselves in. And some because, like, we had a really low self-esteem as a city, I think, in the way that we thought about ourselves and talked about ourselves. And so what person who was hopeful about their future would talk about their future being here? And so that was very much me. I went to Bloomington and my intention was to go to a larger city. And I didn't really care where. It just wasn't going to be South Bend and it was going to be bigger than South Bend. I ended up coming back because I had studied nonprofit management in college and had kind of put out to there to the world that I wanted to find a job at a either like community center or a community development corporation where I could live in the same neighborhood where I work. I could go to church in that neighborhood and I could kind of center my life around like a small geographic location. In the last few months of my last semester of college, my mom called me and their church here in South Bend, it was the church that I'd grown up in, had merged with another church. So it was, for many purposes, the church I had grown up in, was starting a community center in an old bowling alley, kind of right down the street from where I grew up. The bowling alley had unfortunately closed and was empty, had been donated to the church. The church didn't really want to make it into a church building. They didn't really want to own it or be the only tenants. And so they were looking to start a community center where they would be one of the tenants, but it would be open to other people as well, other nonprofits, other people in the community who needed space to do something. And so they asked me if I would come back and consider opening that with them.
So is that what you're still working on now, or have you moved on to focus on West SB?
I have moved on. I did that for about 18 months and one found that I was not really cut out to run a nonprofit. Some because of I was young. I mean, I was 22 at the time when I moved back and did that and was really kind of proud of what we ended up being able to do. We ended up being able to open. And by the time I left, we were somewhere between 15 and 20 organizations using the building on any given month. And that was really exciting. But yeah, running the organization was not exactly my strong suit. And during the time that I was running that, I had picked up photography. And so I hadn't really taken photos at all prior to moving back to South Bend. The mix of the space being familiar, but also quite unfamiliar, kind of gave way to like a creativity that I hadn't really tapped into prior to coming back here. I talk about it sometimes that like the literal open space of empty buildings and entire like empty blocks. I mean, this was people familiar with Mayor Pete will maybe be familiar with the 1,000 Homes in 1,000 Days initiative. And that really did make a clear impact on the landscape that we don't really have many abandoned houses or vacant and abandoned properties in South Bend, largely because of that initiative. But what that has left is a lot of empty land. And the way that I think about it sometimes is like the literal empty land gave way to some sort of like opening of space inside of me to want to create something. Photography was kind of the first thing that filled that. And so I started to explore some of these buildings that I had grown up around that I didn't really have good context for them when I was growing up. Pete talks about them like urban furniture and that they're just kind of there and you don't really wonder why. Like, why do we have these huge kind of hulking abandoned factories and buildings all over the city? That was just normal and kind of assumed that that's just part of being a city. Coming back, I had gotten some context for that at college. I had learned some about why South Bend was the way that it was and was very interested in these spaces and started to explore mostly the abandoned brewery right down the street from my house at the time and taking photos and posting those on Instagram. And that kind of started to give way to what became West SB.
Got it. And I'm definitely going to link to your Instagram too, because I follow you. You have beautiful photos. And yeah, you really captured that, like the space that you talked about. Very well said.
Thank you.
So yeah, so then you decided to form this publication, West SB. How did that come about? And like, what was the need that you were trying to fill?
I think up to the point when I actually started the website, I had probably been posting like in earnest on Instagram for maybe like a year, year and a half of photos of South Bend in a way. I mean, obviously prior to that, I had had an Instagram and had posted things, but I didn't really think about it in any sort of intentional way. It was posting about my life, you know, and, but it'd probably been a year, year and a half that I had been, you know, consciously posting things about South Bend and saying things about South Bend with those photos. I wound up getting tied in with this group of Notre Dame students. I don't really have much of any tie to the university, but a group of Notre Dame students was partnering with the city to help redesign the city's website. And they ended up in my dining room. Just, they didn't really know that I was a photographer, that I had like a Instagram or anything. They just knew I was a resident who would give them feedback on what they were working on. And we got to talking about their redesign of the website and got to talking about my photos. That led way to a little bit of collaboration with the class in how I could help provide some visuals and maybe even like capture some new visuals for the direction they were wanting to go with the website. And one of those things was wanting to humanize the city government some more. And so that led way to a photo shoot where the city paired me up with a group of solid waste workers. This is kind of the last days of alley pickup in South Bend. It was this like much fought over decision that they were moving to all street pickup with the trucks, with the arms and stuff. It's really like hard work for the solid waste workers doing the alley pickup. And so the city wanted to kind of bring a human element to this story and kind of show the work. And so I ran behind the trash truck for, I don't know, 45 minutes, an hour, just taking photos of them for this kind of not official redesign of the city's website. In the end, I kind of had a nice set of photos that felt like they should be somewhere in a more cohesive way than I could do on Instagram at the time. And that was the start of West SB. I started it purely to publish that one kind of set of photos. But then once I had it, it seemed like it made sense to publish some more in a similar vein, which were, you know, pretty simply photo essays with very little writing to give some context to them.
But now at this point, you've like brought different writers in and it's, you know, grown to series and you have like a couple of your own podcasts. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did it grow from there? And like, who are the folks that you were able to involve in the project?
Yeah, it's kind of been this weirdly evolving project that at different times I have taken very seriously as like, this is what I want to spend my time on. And at other times have thought like, this is just kind of this side blog that, you know, when I am interested in a story, I publish on there. That changed a lot going into this last year, going into 2020. I decided that I wanted it to no longer just be Jacob's blog, essentially, and that I was interested in bringing some other people on there. I think if people have followed the blog up to that point, they would have felt like it was a very collaborative effort. And in many ways it was. A lot of people were involved. Essentially, the byline was still me on all the stories. And I have a co-host, Dustin Mix, on the South Bend on Purpose podcast. In most respects, like the end product was a Jacob Titus product. And I was interested in thinking about how that starts to change some in a way that still feels true to what the blog has become over the last 4 years. And so taking a few efforts to do that. One is just, yeah, inviting other people, other photographers. Ryan Blasky is one who's done a number of stories this year. John Gary did a book review recently, and he's going to be doing some more. And then Joe Molnar. So Joe and I had known each other for the last few years kind of casually. We hadn't really spent much time together. I had it in my mind that Joe, from what Joe was putting out online on Twitter and such about South Bend, he has to have some articles in him that he has probably said to people like over dinner. Like he's probably said the entire article over dinner to people and it just wasn't written down and it wasn't put anywhere. And so I was thinking about, I said to my wife one night that I was thinking about reaching out to Joe and just saying like, anything you're interested in right now, you like open door to publish on the blog. And he beat me to it. 2 days after I said that, he messaged me asking if I had looked into any of the census articles around the 70s and 80s when we lost a lot of population about how the city talked about it. Did they at all? Did it just kind of happen and pass by? And some of this was born because the census was going on. And some of it was at the time I was doing a podcast called This Day in South Bend, where I was looking at old articles from a specific date in South Bend. I kind of took that opportunity of him asking to tell him that if he wanted to write about it, it would be an open door on the blog for him to do that. And that kind of started to give way to what became the More People series. It was originally going to be one article and like maybe like a short podcast series. But I think as he started to dive in, it seemed like it was a really important story that deserved more time.
Yeah, very cool. So you've touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious what it's been like to have the national eyes focused on South Bend in a way that it hadn't been before because of Pete Buttigieg running for the Democratic presidential nomination. Do you think, was it just like so many people, you know, making stereotypes and like not understanding South Bend? Or do you think that there was good that came out of that national spotlight being shined?
Yeah, I think it's complicated and it's a mix of all of those things and some more at different times. So I think like at the beginning, for those of us who supported Pete and were very excited about what he was doing, it was just kind of a pure excitement and unable to see how this could be a bad thing for us at all, that this is just a very exciting thing. And at the same time, I don't know that there was a huge understanding that like this might work.
That he had a shot at getting the process.
Yeah, and not exactly prepared for like, oh, well, what does this mean if this goes on for a year or more? And it definitely, got more complicated the longer it went. I think some because of what you were saying, the stereotyping. And this happened on both sides, and both sides made like people like me equally uncomfortable. One is like the kind of negative stereotyping, which takes a couple forms. One is writing specifically about like issues in South Bend that are kind of local issues, but then kind of put through a filter to make sense to a national audience. So this happened a lot with like the Thousand Homes articles. It's more complex than simply like a gentrification issue, right? Like, and some of that takes a context for what does it mean to be a Rust Belt city, or a city that's had massive population decline. I think this is one thing that Joe has looked at a lot in More People and has helped me make sense of this past year in some ways. But that in many ways, the national media needed to filter that story, the Thousand Homes initiative, through a filter that would make sense to an audience in larger cities with more, I would say, more like pure, clear-cut forms of gentrification. And so oftentimes those kind of blanket terms are used to describe things that I think people here might say like, that's part of that story. That word isn't able to capture kind of the complexity and the nuance in the story, if that makes sense. And then in the other side of the negative stereotyping is just the miscategorization. I talked about this a little bit with Emily Badger from the New York Times, came and wrote a piece and walked around the city with us for a while. And she had a good line about, she was trying to discover like, why do people continually call South Bend a college town? And then people in South Bend say, we're not a college town. What is the disconnect there? She had a line in the article saying like that the error doesn't just miscategorize the city. It denies something about like lived experience in a city like South Bend that's hard to live in and has been hard to live in for a long time for a lot of people. And so I think that is just kind of a constantly goes between annoying and painful, I guess, the city being miscategorized by people outside. But I would say that the stereotyping on the positive side was just as hard to deal with. We have a lot of fans now who are just like unabashed fans of South Bend and anything that happens in South Bend. And, you know, like people took road trips here to like vacation here for a weekend to see South Bend and go to like the site of Pete's book cover or like where Pete and Chasten had their first date and stuff, which like there are obviously some benefits to that, right? Like having a reason for people to travel to your city can be a good thing. At the same time, it also denies something about like lived experience in a place like this, because it's, you know, I think Pete, for a lot of reasons, was a good mayor and changed South Bend in a way that like is hard to deny. And at the same time, it's still a hard city to live in and a hard city to commit to that like you're going to stay here. That is not what these people would say to you on Twitter and stuff, that South Bend is kind of this magical fairyland to a lot of people.
Mm. Like they're just sweeping in for a weekend to get their pictures and then not seeing the full experience.
Yeah, totally. In a way that, yeah, it does just deny the truth that it's still a hard city for a lot of people, and it's hard to live in a city that's lost a lot of people. Those things are hard, and that when that side is kind of denied as well, it's just as painful.
It's been interesting to see like some of those conversations be reignited with Mayor Pete being selected for the transportation secretary. Like, I'm sure you have heard all that, like people being like, what, they don't even have public transit in the Midwest or whatever. And it's just, I'm excited about the possibilities of him in that role.
I think it's a great role for him. I guess I am sympathetic to the fact that, like, yeah, we don't have a subway system or anything like that. But I think that if Pete has, you know, shown himself to be anything, it's kind of competent at running a system. And I think it's hard to deny that that's one of the major reasons why he was successful in the election, beyond what he should have been. They ran like a solid operation. And I don't think that's something to be discounted.
Yeah. So turning back to West SB for a minute, what are your hopes for what's next? Do you have any upcoming series planned, or just kind of seeing where the road takes you?
Yeah, I think there's a mix of both of that. When it comes to my own content that I will put out on the site, I generally don't plan much because when I plan it, I end up not doing it. And then I, you know, feel bad that I planned it and didn't do it. And so for my own content, I end up just kind of, yeah, as things come, I write them or I go take photos and publish them. That said, there are things that we are planning. We are hoping to publish more under the Joe Molnar byline. He is a kind of a wealth of thoughts about South Bend and cities like South Bend. And I think that there are a lot of kind of threads that have come out of our More People conversations that lead to, yeah, some interesting things that could be written about. One of those is we've toyed with this idea on the More People podcast about a series about imaginary lines, that a lot of what came out of the More People series was realizing just how much these kind of imaginary lines that we draw, that like, this is South Bend, now this isn't South Bend, this is Mishawaka, this is unincorporated land, how much that affects daily life for a lot of people. And that, you know, a lot of the wealthiest have left South Bend and left the poorest to pay for a lot of the things that we all benefit from, though, right? Living 5 miles outside of South Bend, for most people, they're able to still access and make use of all of the benefits of being in South Bend. Most of their jobs are in South Bend. And like those things exist because South Bend is a city and because some people pay taxes for that city to operate. But if you hop over one of those imaginary lines, you can opt out of, you know, contributing to that in a very direct way. And so I think like that's one of the things that we will chase down, probably multiple kind of angles that have come out of the More People series. I am planning to return to the This Day in South Bend podcast. That had started mostly as like a quarantine project. Yeah, I had a lot of time and I was sitting around the house and I spend a ton of time on newspapers.com searching the South Bend Tribune archives. And I was realizing that I was finding all these interesting articles and stories and mostly just texting them to my friends. Like, hey, isn't this interesting? And realized that I could do just about no more work. Just put a microphone in front of my face and read the story and we could have an interesting podcast. That was great for that time. It was a lot to do it daily. And so I'm going to be bringing it back this year as a weekly podcast and maybe go a little more in depth into the stories. And we also have South Bend on Purpose episodes planned. We're constantly kind of going back and forth on whether we're ever going to commit to a publishing schedule with South Bend on Purpose. That's still up in the air. But yeah, we are planning episodes for that.
Very cool. I'm going to have to check out those podcasts. So this is kind of a broader, more meta question, but like you obviously use photography and I think you've done some film to, you know, help us understand our cities and I would say to, you know, make a positive difference in your city. And I think that's not a medium that everyone thinks of when they think of activism, building stronger towns. It's like you need to go run for office or, you know, start a big campaign, advocacy, whatever. But what do you see as the power of photography, writing, even podcasting, these sorts of arts mediums to help us understand our cities and make them better?
You know, starting out when I was doing this, I definitely would have fell in that camp of not exactly understanding why this is powerful. You know, it was definitely like it was something I wanted to do and I felt like this kind of urge to do it. But I don't know at the beginning that it was this very clear. I'm going to do this to have these kind of positive outcomes on the city. That very quickly changed as I realized that it just did. And I didn't exactly know why, but it definitely did because there were more people interested in the blog and the photos that I was putting out than should be if I was just kind of publishing photos for publishing photos' sake or interesting things. I think the first thing that I kind of stumbled into was just that reimagining the spaces that we inhabit or the places that we identify with, which for, you know, people in South Bend, this is like very early on. It was a very concerted effort to like frequently publish things of downtown South Bend. Not because there's a ton of people that live in downtown South Bend, but because a lot of people identify with it. That feels like where I live, even though like I don't live in downtown. But when I see the photos of it, like that's what I identify with. And that there was a power in kind of a reimagination of the way we saw those spaces. That's what I heard from a lot of people in the early years was simply that the photos were beautiful and that that wasn't a word that they would have used to describe the spaces around them or like the businesses that they frequent. And so that was part was simply like a kind of an updating our like aesthetic mind about the places that we live and the places like the spaces that we inhabit. And that I think that turns out to be a powerful tool for people feeling like the place that they live is a place worth their time and worth them committing to it and contributing to it. It's exciting to contribute to something that is beautiful in a way that still is like quite obviously incomplete. So I guess when I say beautiful, that could be misinterpreted. Like there are places that are objectively beautiful. You know, you can point a camera at them and the photo is great. There's like an incompleteness, though, I think, to the photos of a place like South Bend that is still glaring and very obvious for anybody who lives here that pairs that feeling of beauty and excitement about the place you live with this feeling like we need to do something.
I like how you shine a light on things with your photos that it would be easy to walk past and not notice. or not like look closely at. I think that's really powerful.
It became very important to me, especially when I started to shoot photos of small businesses, that it you know, like kind of what you're talking about of shining light on like things you might not notice, that it was like adding a layer of depth to people's experience of the city. At least it was for mine. And I assumed that other people would pick up on that as well, that it matters for me that I know the story of the pizzeria and the family who owns it and the people who operate it. It changes my entire experience of ordering and eating pizza. And that kind of changes the way I go about life in a city. A lot of people will say in South Bend that, like, one of the reasons we love living in South Bend is that pretty much every business that I go to, I'm like greeted by name because I know these people, because it's a smaller city, you know, and like you can do that if you just go frequent enough, which doesn't need to be a ton. The people who run the restaurants or shops, like, they know who you are, and that makes a big difference in life. And I started to get the feeling like, could we scale that a little bit with stories? Yeah, not everybody's going to become like on a first name basis at like Lacapo's Pizzeria was like an early story. And a lot of people aren't comfortable like getting into conversation with the owner of a small business when they just, you know, are ordering and picking up pizza. But could we get 80% of the way there by telling a story about these people in a way that's accessible for people to read on the blog, that would still kind of in a very positive way shape their experience of the city?
Yeah, I love that. So what advice would you have for people who might want to take a step to doing something like that, even if they don't have, you know, an extensive photography background or skill set, but want to start shining a light, sharing some of these stories, making their town a little bit better? How do you think we get started?
Well, I would say first that I started with no photography background and with an iPhone. It was an iPhone like 4S at the time. That's what I would use. I would go out and take photos of places. By the time I was doing my West SB stories, I had bought a camera. It was like a $250 Nikon camera, which at the time seemed like this crazy, like, what am I? I'm spending $200 on a camera for this like weird blog that, you know, that doesn't, I mean, to this day, it's really kind of like a hopefully we can break even project. But yeah, for a lot of people, I mean, now like iPhones are amazing and those can accomplish just as much as I was with that early camera. So I would say to people that these stories, like early on, I was telling stories about small businesses and about buildings, like empty buildings, both of which are happy for their story to be told. The abandoned buildings, I guess, don't really have too much of a say in the matter. Like, you can show up and take pictures and tell the story, tell the history, if that's a thing, if that's like a feature of the landscape in your city. But for everyone, small businesses are a feature of the landscape in our cities, if you just kind of look around. It's at least my experience that if you show yourself to be like genuine in your like desire to tell the small business's story for them with a level of like earnestness and quality, not to say that it needs to be like polished and beautiful, but that like you're gonna, you know, do a good job with their like business that they've been running for 60 years. No one says no. People ask me often, like, oh, how did you get so-and-so to do the story? How did you get that story? I like, yeah, simply just called up and asked whoever answered the phone most of the time. Generally, people are happy for their story to be told. Yeah, it doesn't have to be fancy photos, I guess is what I would say. Like, when I think about the Lacapo's Pizzeria story, which one of the early West SB stories, like the story, I can remember the quotes that are in the story that they told me. And I can remember the one photo of the two of them, the brother and sister who run the shop. Just them looking straight at the camera in their space. And that's what I remember. And that's a photo that's pretty straightforward to take. You know, like there are other photos in that story of them doing things, them making pizza and stuff like that. There's a like a quiet power in confronting people with, you know, like the small business people of their city in their space, doing their thing. It's something that like the small business owners appreciate. A lot of them, like, they can't pay people to do any sort of marketing for them, or nor do they necessarily always have the time to even think about that or consider that. But it's definitely a way. I mean, early on, I was just looking for excuses to take photos, you know, and people who would let me take photos of interesting things and cool things. I think there's a power in just matching like that need up, that like I needed cool things to take photos of. Small businesses are excited for their story to be told. Matching those things up has a lot of power for people who are, I think, wanting to get started and doing something like that.
Yeah. Well said. Well, thank you so much, Jacob, for taking the time to talk with us and share your story. I'm going to share a whole bunch of links to everything you mentioned for everyone listening. And yeah, we'll be excited to keep following along with your website and podcasts and Instagram and all your work in South Bend.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
I have to admit that conversation with Jacob has been one of my favorites so far on this show. If you've got a story to share about the action you're taking to make your town stronger, please let me know. If we learned anything from Jacob's insights, it's that stories are powerful and transformational. Send me your thoughts in a voicemail or email and send them to rachel@strongtowns.org. We did not get any emails or voicemails last week, so come on, come through for me, you guys. This week, it's always great to hear from you. One quick reminder before we close here, we've still got tickets available for our upcoming Locomotive tour. Visit strongtowns.org/locomotive to get yours. This series of 10 online events is going to equip you with so many valuable tools for building a strong town, whether you want to make streets safer or support local entrepreneurs. The tour starts February 4th, and I will tease this for you now. I'm going to be the MC, so it should be a fun ride. Finally, Strong Towns is a member-supported organization. We simply could not be where we are in this movement without you all. If you're taking action to make your city stronger, will you also take a small step to help this nonprofit keep working to serve you and provide great resources like this podcast or our new Action Lab? Head to strongtowns.org/membership to sign up today. Memberships start as low as $5 a month. And we thank you so much for your support. So we'll see you back here next week for more of the Bottom Up Revolution. Take care.